Yeah, I told him he didn't know about the change with the committee and everything.
No, that's not what I'm...
Right, I'd like to call the meeting of the Citizens Transportation Oversight Commission to order. Thank you for attending tonight. We're going to do a roll call. Vice Chairman Fernandez, Commissioner Nesfield, Commissioner Sun, and Commissioner O'Connor are not going to be here tonight. Commissioner Fundis?
Here.
Commissioner Jared?
Here.
Commissioner Hauser?
Here.
Commissioner Nyland?
Here.
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Commissioner Young?
Here.
So we have seven in attendance. We have a quorum. We'd like to look over the agenda and we did a motion to approve the agenda.
Move we approve the agenda.
Commissioner Rose moves the motion, the second.
Second.
Commissioner Jared, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And if you will look over the minutes and see if there's any corrections, updates.
I have one correction, Chair.
Okay.
Commissioner Nyland? Under item seven, the back page, where it's actually saying that I suggested that instead of growing the city surplus to 100 million, that the road conditions should be addressed and recommended. The actual figure I used was 50 million.
Commissioner Nyland, can you clarify what paragraph that's in?
It's on the very top of the back page, on item seven.
Oh, I see.
It's the continuum of the second paragraph.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. We want to give any more exciting ideas to our elected council. 100 million.
Commissioner Jared?
Okay, on number eight, where it says bike parking ordinance, it should be parking.
Oh, okay, got it. Perfect. Sorry about that.
Anybody else? Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So made.
Commissioner Nyland made a motion, second.
Second.
Commissioner Jared, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. This time we usually have citizens' comments, but I don't see any citizens here. Looks like it was here from Metro and from the city. So we'll skip that. We'll go on to item number seven, or six, excuse me, the GO program audit.
Chair Gears and Commissioners, at the Commission's request, Vicki Rios and Lizette Camacho have joined us tonight from the Finance Department, and they will discuss the GO program audit findings related to the Finance Department. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Mr. Eversole brought to our attention that the Commission have specific questions relating to the GO performance audit, specifically on the allocation of the indirect cost. Just to give you a brief background on the indirect cost. The indirect cost is to charge, let me take a step back. Our support services, like the budget and finance, HR, and other various departments that who support the functions of the city are charged to the general fund. And if transportation would be on its own fund and would have those specific support services, HR for example, then they would go out and hire those specific individuals themselves and they would be incurring those costs within the fund. The way we do that here in the city is that the general fund funds those positions and those costs are charged to the general fund, and that is really the purpose of the indirect cost allocation, is to charge transportation's cost or share of the cost for the support services department to the fund itself. So it's really like charging the overhead cost for the specific special revenue funds like the transportation fund. In the GO audit, The indirect cost audit finding is an audit finding that we had in a previous audit. So it is something that we're aware of. We knew about it from the last audit, which covered the prior three fiscal years. So this audit really covers fiscal year 2015 through 2017. So it's a span of three fiscal years. And when the audit started for that time period, we, the city, didn't have a cost allocation plan that's in writing. So we didn't really have a method. And at that point, transportation, since we didn't have a cost allocation or indirect cost plan, prior to implementing the existing cost allocation plan, transportation were not getting charged any indirect cost. With this plan, the reason why we have an audit finding and why it continued to in this audit is that the audit period that we have is prior to the implementation of this new cost allocation plan. The way the plan was determined was we did hire a consultant to do this on behalf of the city. They looked at all the costs for the support services, and then through this methodology, they determined what is transportation's share of the support services cost. So as far as the audit, and the prior audit, because this one has also been published, is that it is something that is communicated to council. It is something that they're aware of. We do publish and make public the results of all our audits, and even our comprehensive annual financial report. We do have a workshop presentation to council. We review the results of the audit with them. So it is something that they are aware of. As far as the indirect cost and the charges to transportation, it is part of the budget process. So throughout that budget process, we have several workshops with the city council. It is something that we budget for, and it is part of the budget that they adopt and approve through the budget process. So just wanna address any specific questions, if you guys have any, and I'll just wanna turn it over to the commission.
Does anybody have any questions? Commissioner
Lyle. I believe one of the questions that came up in our discussion was a plan that had been, adopted to be utilized by the Transportation Department that had been canceled. And when we asked the gentleman that was here that night where that action stemmed from, it was indicated to us that it came back to your department. And so could you possibly illuminate on how that occurs?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, can you specifically talk about what plan? What is the plan that is in question? Is it the cost allocation plan, or is it something else? Or
do you recall? Was that? Do you know who he was?
I believe Commissioner Nyland is referencing CIP input the reference manual that used to be published and has been discontinued. I believe that's right.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, the CIP plan or the CIP manual. Well, speaking of the CIP plan, when we're talking about the capital improvement plan, that is part of the budget process. It is developed through the budget process, and it is part of the budget that council adopts on an annual basis. So we do, again, we do workshop presentations with the council. We run through the various projects that are identified in that cost, the capital improvement plan. As far as the CIP manual, it is something that we are in the process of updating in conjunction with engineering. So the CIP manual is a manual, it's a procedures manual essentially, on how we process and work with capital improvement projects. We've been meeting with the engineering department. We're meeting with them every 2 weeks so that we can update the manual and also determine what the appropriate engineering costs and chargebacks would be, but it is something that we're working on and that we are in the process of updating. I believe the manual is out there, it just hasn't been updated in several years. Nothing's been canceled. It is something that is out there, it's just not updated.
Okay, well, let me ask the question, if I may, back to you then. Since it has not been updated and you're working on it and it's a multi-year work project, if it's shelved though and not utilized in regards to as a stopgap to control cost, and to keep cost overruns from occurring, why are we not bringing that to a current position, especially with costs escalating like they are in this particular category of the city's operations?
Chair and Commissioners, if I might, Lisette. With the CIP projects, our process, it's current. And what we're doing is transportation, for example, works with engineering very closely on the projects that we need. And they engineering, so we're their customer. Engineering will implement the project and provide project management for it. They'll solicit bids, and they do their cost estimates, and they're very accurate. They're within plus or well, they're very accurate. They've been within plus or minus 25%, and that's the worst case scenario. So the CIP process that we have is up to date. It's current. It's competitive. So as Lisette indicated, it does go back to council on an annual basis, and it's pretty comprehensive, and they get the full detail of it.
I also want to add that we do have controls on the procurement side of things also. So even though the CIP projects, for example, we take that to council and, you know, they vet out which projects should be funded and also should be approved through the budget process. But for the specific projects itself, as Trevor said, the project and the total cost for the project is a combination of efforts between the finance department, transportation, engineering, and when that cost is identified, it's based on real-time information. So it's a very good estimate. Right. But on the procurement side of things, which budget and finance also oversees, is that contracts for construction, capital improvements, they're vetted through the attorney's office. Re-in procurement also makes sure that we do a competitive bid so that we get the best price for every services or goods that we purchase. So we have those specific controls. And also for a specific, let's say it's a contractor that we're gonna use for this one project and we're gonna use multiple contractors. If the agreement is gonna be $50,000 or more, that also goes back to council for another approval. So even though council has already approved the budget for the project, once we're procuring for the goods or the services, it goes back to them again for a secondary approval. So there's a lot of controls there. And for and in order for it to go to council, we are part of that review process again. It does go into our, you know, work list. We review it. We ensure that there's funding. And also any cost beyond what is in the contract that's taken to the council, any increase to that would also go back to council again for approval.
Yeah, I think that the stimulation of the question really came from a cost overrun that occurred. If my memory doesn't fail me, we had projections, and then the cost overrun on that one project area was substantial. And when we asked the gentleman who brought that information into this commission the question, he referred it back to finance. And that's why we've requested the finance department have a representation here to bring us to a level of elimination so we would have a better understanding of the process. I think I have a handle on the process, but I'm not sure that...
There's a little bit more to that. I think what the audit discovered is that there wasn't a process for all departments to view. That's what started it. This document wasn't available, and in their audit, they found out that it wasn't available for each and every department to look at. So that's what we brought the question, and then the overhead, and the cost overruns because it wasn't available. And then they said it's because it wasn't being printed anymore and it wasn't being distributed to each department anymore. So that was one of our concerns, that it's not available. And you said you're working on it, but evidently the auditors didn't know that.
The man that was here had no, he did not bring us to that level of awareness. Mm-hmm. He did not state that it was being worked on and developed on an up-to-date basis. He gave the impression that that was gone.
Right.
You know, so that's what we were concerned about. And when we asked the question, who makes that decision, even though I had an anticipation of the response, I had no idea that he went back to finance with a response. That's where it lies. So your department, and by the way, congratulations on the interim directorship. Thank you for being here, I should say, as well. But that puts you in a position, though, to respond again to this question. If it's current and it's available, is it now in position to help control and hopefully keep as the lowest possible cost overruns?
Yes, I think we're talking different things.
Sorry, let me just jump in and maybe, and I, by the way, I'm Vicki.
She's the newest assistant city manager.
She was our previous.
I was the finance director before,
right.
Yes. So I feel a little bit like we're talking about a few different things all in one. So we have the cost allocation plan, which is identified here in the audit. And then we have something called a CIP manual. And as Ms. Camacho said, it's in the process of being updated. But because we're in the process of updating something doesn't mean we're not still following the procedures and the controls and doing the things that are within that manual. So we can, you know, look into this notion or whatever that it's not available printed. I wasn't, you know, really fully aware of that piece of it. Certainly once it's been updated, it will be out there and, you know, more up to date. And we'll ensure that that happens. But we are still following, as she said, all of the controls and processes that are identified in that and have been long-standing policies and procedures here in the city regarding the things like Mr. Eversall said, you know, as far as how we procure, how we budget, how we charge those projects for indirect costs and things like that. We're still doing those. We're just in the process of updating it. So the most recent version isn't out there because it's still in the process of being updated.
Okay, but I go back to the cost overrun numbers, and those are not little numbers.
I think I have an answer for you on that.
Okay, those costs, if that thing was being followed, and there was some, I mean, there was gauges that were being watched, use that as an analogy, on a good engine that's running, how do you end up with less gas?
Great. Chair and Commissioners, I believe you might be referring to like a change order or an addition to a project. The scope of the project had changed during the project. And in the event that occurs, if that cost is over the amount of the approved appropriation by council, then it goes back to council. So council's made well aware of it, of that change, the overrun, with each and every project that passes through the city. So CTOC, or Citizens Transportation Oversight Commission, may not be privy to that information prior to council in a situation like that, but council is made aware of that situation.
Yeah. Well, I think the concern came from the statements made by the gentleman who represented the audit report. And so the way it was phrased or the way it was stated is a matter of the record, of course, but led us to believe that there might be something that should be looked at. And so, or something is not being handled correctly. So it sounds like, in effect, that you do have the control mechanisms to contain cost overruns if you go back to council each time.
Right.
You know, and so that's something you have to deal with on everything, of course, as a city. So this report, if I understand that the mechanism or the purpose of that particular report or that manual, if you want to call it a manual, it is basically, as you might use an analogy, a manual if you're going to use a TV. Here's how you do it. It's going to cost you so much for the electricity and so forth. If you don't watch it, you're going to pay more. Or if you get a HBO movie, that's going to cost a lot. So, but the finance department is really, are they the watchdog? Are they the ones that bring it up to the attention of the council?
Chair and Commissioners, yes. But so is the department that owns the project, and so is the project managing department. So in transportation's case, that would be, you'd have three departments providing oversight to the appropriation for the projects: transportation, engineering, and finance, budget finance. So you have three sets of eyes watching the project creep, the money creep. And as we enter a project into our software system for appropriation, it has to, all the I's have to be dotted, the T's have to be crossed, the dollars have to line up. We have to show valid accounts for the appropriation before budget and finance will approve anything. So they're the final I's on the funding. And that's post-council approval.
Okay. Okay, I think I understand this. So when do you anticipate a finished product printed for all eyes to see?
Are you talking about for the CIP
yes.
manual?
Yeah.
Do you know
that? It should be coming up, well, before the end of the fiscal year. So that's June 30th, but it'd be sooner than that. We're working with engineering on this, and obviously before we publish and finalize that document, we want to make sure that it works with the departments that's going to be utilizing sure. this manual. So that we would have reach out in meetings with them so that we make sure that we it's comprehensive and it covers all bases.
Do you
I wanted to add to that, and this may be something that you're aware of also, but the city also recently implemented a new financial system, and the new financial system handles, we'll call it project accounting, slightly different. So one of the reasons why the CIP manual has to be updated is so that it tells you how to do things in our new system. So part of it, if we have a manual out there, and it says, well, this is how you do it, but then you go to do it, and it was referring to how to do certain things in PeopleSoft, and we haven't updated it to how do you do them now in the new system. That's part of this process. So, and I'm not sure, again, what was communicated, but it may have been, well, it's not being printed and it's not out there. Well, it's not relevant if it's telling you how to do things in a system we no longer have. So I believe that's also a part of it. We have several policies here in the city we're having to update to tell you how to do things in our new system. But they're still being done because the concepts haven't changed, mm-hmm. but the steps and the exact screens where you might be doing things or looking at things have to be updated to reflect the new financial system as well.
I understand that. I think our concern also, and as a member here, the thing that came to me was this was a 17, 16, 15 overview. And it had been based on what we were told, eliminated during that time. So that gave us a feeling that, well, there's no manual to follow, but in effect, you have the operational structure and you actually do follow it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a few questions. They also talked about indirect costs and they kind of estimated the indirect cost. Could you tell me what the exact transportation cost is for indirect charges?
I believe that the amount that we're charging is approximately $1.4 million.
That's for transportation.
To the transportation sales tax fund, or to the GO program.
And where does that come from? Does it come out of GO money? Does it come out of the tax? How does that revenue, how is that cost covered?
Yes, it comes out of the chairman members. It comes out of the GO funding.
Because Councilman Clark, when she was Councilman before Vice Mayor, transferred or asked to transfer $100,000 out of GO money, like last year, I guess, to put it into the general fund to pay for indirect costs. I didn't realize it was $1.2 million for indirect costs out of the GO fund. Can we get $25 million a year out of a GO tax, and then a million's taken out for indirect costs?
So, that's right.
Chairman members, I think what you're referring to, take a stab at what you're referring to, is for a number of years, I've only been here going on 6 years, Lisette, you know, same. But there was a long-standing transfer, not from the GoFund to the general fund, but the other way around. There was always a transfer, was $900,000 from the general fund to transportation.
Okay, to cover indirect costs.
And there was not to cover, that's the opposite. That's the opposite. It's general fund, your general fund tax dollars were being sent over to help with transportation. So not an indirect charge, not to cover the costs. It was like it was just a straight transfer out of general fund to transportation.
It was a budget item, right?
It was a budget item, and it was $900,000, and it was transferred from the general fund to transportation.
To support services.
To support additional services and transportation. Then, when the cost allocation issue came up at that time, there was no cost being allocated to transportation. So two things happen sort of simultaneously. If you think about it, it sort of doesn't make sense. If you're transferring $900,000 over there, and then you're transferring $1.4 million, you know, or whatever amount back, it's like, well, you're putting it here, and then you're also taking it back in another method. So council saw fit to take away the $900,000 going in this direction, and at the same time we began allocating a portion of the general fund cost to transportation.
That fund is now sending money to the city.
Is sending money to the general fund to pay for support services.
Right. That's the identified allocation, right?
That is the identified allocation.
So I guess the money that the city saved, that they were putting into the GoHop administrative cost, indirect cost, where did that money go?
Can you
ask that question again?
The $1.4 million that was being put in, is that now part of the rainy day fund?
It is not $1.4 million that is being put in to a fund. It is $1.4 million that is being transferred from transportation to pay for services that the general fund is providing for it, such as accounting services, HR services,
legal services,
city attorney services, payroll, information technology, computers, all of these things that the transportation fund uses that it was not ever paying for.
But I guess in the past it did not come out of the GoFund, and now it is.
That is correct. We began allocating a portion of that cost to the GoFund under this cost allocation.
So if that cost administration dollar is 1.4, is that where we are today?
That's where we are today. That's
I'll say. So we're at 80 plus points, or 80 plus percent is now being taken care of from the GoFund. And about less than 20% is taken care of from the general fund. Is that a correct assessment?
I'm not sure how you're getting those.
I'm just thinking about the dollars. 1.4. 900,000. So now the city is getting a chunk of that money back when they switched the way it was handled from the GoFund.
Right.
So we're taking money out of the GoFund, okay, which is generated by the taxation approach.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And so in the past, the city actually bore that cost total.
Yes.
And so now they no longer bore that cost. So those funds that we put in indirectly save the city $900,000 out of the general fund budget. Am I correct?
I think you could spin it that way, but what the chair and commissioners, what the true expense is the transportation tax or go fund went for years without even paying the indirect cost to the city. Mm-hmm. The city bore that burden, and 2 years ago, that's when Go started paying the indirect allocation for the services that we render from the city to support transportation. So the city, I mean transportation, the Go tax didn't pay that for years.
Plus, so and if I could again, and maybe this will clarify. So the amount of charge isn't just to transportation. So when we do the cost allocation plan, portion of it goes to pay water is an enterprise fund. It pays a portion of it. Solid waste pays a portion of it. The landfill pays a portion of it. All of the other funds that are non-general fund pay some portion of services that are being provided. So when the allocation was redone and we began charging a portion of it to transportation, what it did is just reallocate the same amount. So there is no additional funds going to the general fund. It was just reallocated amongst the funds.
If we did not have the tax, there would be no GoFunds, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're not a fee-based organization. I mean, the GO program is not a fee-based group. It's a taxation group, whereas landfill and water are fee-based, are they not?
That's correct.
Okay. So I'm trying to understand the mythology. Methodology, I should say. Not mythology. Mythology is something we talk about every day. Oh. But methodology. In the grasping this whole program, the way it's set up, because when the light rail went away and that big surplus was there, we saw now things changing. And that was kind of about the same time, a year and a half ago. It's amazing.
Pretty close. Yeah. The indirect allocation came after the chair and commissioners. The indirect cost allocation fee to the GoFund came after the dissolution of light rail. Yeah. But if you look at this this fee as I think I understand where you're coming from. The GoFund, it's a tax, but it's created expense. So sure. It's hired staff. It's paying for staff. It's paying for services and programs. And as a result of that, we need to pay for the legal support, the IT support, the financial support, and all the other ancillary supports.
Yeah. It's like having a government entity within a government.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, again, conceptually, and to Trevor's point, and just to emphasize that, if it were all on its own, the GoFund was sitting here all on its own, and it was somehow separated from the city, it would have to hire attorneys, it would have to hire payroll people, it would have to hire, clerk's office to publish open meetings, and it would have to have its own website.
Right.
It would have to hire all of these services somehow. And but instead, the general fund is providing those services, and one could reasonably argue that it's less expensive for the general fund to provide those because it's being provided as a portion and being charged out to everyone. We're not allocating all of the cost of the general fund. It's only a portion because we recognize that general fund supports itself as well. So that's what the cost allocation plan does. It goes out and it takes a look at what are the costs that should be allocated, like HR and payroll and finance and city attorney and all of these services, and how much should each, based on different factors, how much should each organization pay, and then comes up with a methodology for charging those appropriately.
Okay. We stand unique, I believe, in the sense of the GO program in generating funds through a tax for the city. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So with that particular thing in mind, this thing that brought Ms. Camacho here tonight was that manual thing. So like all those things you just talked about for all these departments, is that all part of that system is in that chunk there?
Or yes.
That's where it's housed?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's really an important piece.
It's not actually in the CIP manual. It's in the cost allocation. There's
two separate entities, right?
Correct.
But those are, they're kind of seems to me that's probably one of the most important pieces in the management side of the budget. Is that correct in my assumption or assessment? Those two things that you just mentioned, CIP and the cost appropriations.
Are you asking me if there are two of the most important things in the budget?
Yeah.
No, I mean not in my opinion.
Okay.
In my All opinion, right. The most important things in the budget are what is it that you want to spend your budget dollars on? What are the priorities? Do you want to spend more on bus services? More on, you know, the budget process is about what is the priority for how you want to spend your funding, and what are you sort of trying to accomplish, or what are the outcomes that you're trying to achieve for the community, and then where is the funding going to be coming from? That to me, honestly, they're administrative practices, okay, to allocate overhead. You know, it's an allocation of overhead, and if you have any engineering firm, any accounting firm, any, you know, type of, most businesses that are out there have a methodology for allocating overhead, and that's what these two things accomplish.
And these two things, the one that we focused on tonight from where we wanted the questions responded to, they're more fluid because of their constant change. Is that correct?
The costs have to be updated periodically. And the CIP manual has to be updated because over time systems and processes and things change. But one, they don't change monthly, daily. They are fairly static except for the updating of numbers, and they need to be reviewed periodically. Mm-hmm. But they don't. They're not. I would not say they are fluid.
They're not fluid. They're more solid.
Yes, okay. I would characterize them as being more. They're just practices and procedures, and then things that have to be looked at periodically. But they're not changing as quickly as the budget changes every year.
Right.
And the budget sometimes changes mid-year because something comes, you know, those things are a little more.
I have a few questions. Of the transportation department, you pay the 1.4 for overhead, so is everything transportation does, every person that worked there, is on GO projects?
Negative.
The entire city? So then should the GO tax be paying 100% of the overhead when the GO tax is for just GO programs? And how have you split that up so that you're only paying out of GO tax money for the overhead on the GO programs?
So that's an excellent question. Do you want to answer that question, or would you like me to answer? the transportation department has some things that are funded out of the general fund. It has some things that are funded out of HERF, Highway User Revenue, and some things that are funded out of this transportation tax. And the allocation model takes all of those things into consideration and is only charging the transportation tax its share of that cost.
It's proportionate share.
It's proportionate share. It's also making we also have a charge to HERF. The portion of the fund that is general funded, we're not charging it because it doesn't make sense. We charge yourselves.
Right.
So let me get a little clarification. So all these other programs, I'm just trying to get a total over. So 1.4 doesn't cover all expense. What is the total overhead expense for transportation? Do you know? Approximately.
I do not know off the top of my head what the total for all of transportation is. I can tell you that the total being charged, what I was getting to earlier, like everybody's paying some portion of it, the total being charged to everyone, including water and solid waste and all of them, is about $10 million.
Okay. I was just more interested in the GO tax money because that's what we're kind of keeping an eye on that stuff.
It's this 1.4.
Yeah. That's for that. And then for all, you don't know, that's for everybody, water, sewer. What about just for transportation? For all the programs and transportations, do you have to know?
Chair and Commissioner, I believe the current year's indirect allocation amount for transportation is approximately 1.5, 1.6 million. Because we're stepping it up? Oh.
2.5?
Mm.
It's
2.6
million.
2.6
million.
For all of
transportation. So all of transportation is 2.6. The 25 million out of GO is paying 1.5. So transportation has a $15 million budget. Is that what you're kind of saying? That's my simple thinking. If we're paying half of the cost, if the GO money is paying half the cost of indirect charges, then the other half is paid by the rest of transportation, so we get $25 million, and is the rest of the transportation $25 million budget, or are you way more than that?
There's approximately, Chair and Commissioners, there's approximately $25 million from GO and $17 million from HERF.
Okay.
And you showed us all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. So everybody, okay.
That's not it. Ms. Rios talked about, we also get general fund support. So the general fund does contribute to a portion of transportation.
I just wanted to make sure GO's paying, not paying more than its fair share. And it's hard to figure out.
Chairman, it's not based on the fund. It's not based on the funding. So in other
based
words, when we do the cost
funding,
allocation, right, it's not based on, okay, well, because this entity has $25 million in revenue, we're going to charge it this month. It's actually based on other factors that are in that plan, like how many invoices get processed, how many employees do they have, how many computers, there's a whole bunch of factors that go into it. So it's not relative necessarily to the revenue source.
I used to work at government projects, and when a person, Patrick's working on a job, and he charges this number, that number goes for this overhead cost. But then anybody does a different project, that goes somewhere else, and they have it really itemized.
That's right.
And really split down. Does the city of Glendale do
yes.
in that detail?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Because we couldn't use paper if it was from a different program. So that's your government project. Are there any more questions? We went over our 20 minutes. Very interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a commissioner who stimulated some of this thought process, I want to thank both of you for being here tonight.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Yeah.
So, and the auditors, they just brought up some questions that they didn't have the answers to. And, of course, it is years past, 2 years ago. But it seemed to have been a repeating thing from the earlier audit. So I just wonder if it's going to be, try to avoid having it repeating to the next audit.
We do believe that that it will not continue to be an issue, although again it's going to be a two-year audit, but we do have a plan, so the finding that we don't have a plan should fall off of the audit.
Thank you
plan.
Very much.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you, Lisette.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting if you'd like.
Did you work this? Oh, yeah.
I said the agenda is the Glendale Transit.
Chair Viewers, Commissioners, we're going to play musical chairs here for just a minute. I
didn't know.
Oh, okay. You guys want to join us up here?
Nice to see you.
Hot seat, so to speak.
Thank you.
You guys have a presentation?
No.
I'll start.
You know, it says this one's 15 minutes, but you guys can go over to it.
Chair Gears and Commissioners, Valley Metro has joined us this evening to discuss the Glendale Transit Plan, which is a project that is just getting underway. You guys introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Joe Gregory. I'm the Manager of Service Planning and GIS at Valley Metro.
And I'm Matthew Taunton. I'll be the project manager for the Glendale Transit Plan Service Implementation Task.
And we also have Jessica Parks here, who's going to be the community support specialist for this project.
Let me get her up front.
You take my seat.
So we can see your shining face.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so the Glendale Transit Plan is basically, we do about two of these per fiscal year. Valley Metro has 19 member agencies. So we try to spread them out and work with every city and give it a transit plan, maybe 5 or 10 years when we can get them. So we usually have in our budget about two per year that we try to do. And so Matt approached us and put this on the calendar for this year, and we were really happy to come out here. So and thanks for bringing us out here. So basically, the transit plan is kind of split up into two parts. The first part is to look at the existing services and look at, its ridership, its frequency, basically make an audit of everything that's running in Glendale currently. And also in the process of that, also look at the demographics, look at the kind of the community centers, the activity centers throughout the city, to try to understand what the existing transit is and how it's kind of serving the community. And the second part is to look at how those can be augmented, what the future plan is. And that also is kind of split up into two parts. There's the short range kind of portion of it, which is basically from now until the end of Prop 400, which is the city, the countywide tax that was instituted in the early 2000s. And it's going to be running out at the end of 2025. Before that, they're going to try to have an extension to be put on the ballot countywide. That they're shooting, I think, for 2022 or so. That's under the auspices of MAG, under the American Association of Governments. So they're working on that now, and that's kind of the plan for now. So the new services are kind of split up into two parts. What we can do until the end of the tax now, and then what can happen after the tax, when the new tax hopefully is passed, and there's additional funds that would come out of that. So that would be identifying the new services, new facilities, looking at the existing services. Can any of that kind of be consolidated? Anything made to run a little bit more efficiently? Is it serving the total needs of the community, or are there new areas where there's much more development and maybe we haven't been serving it so far and we really need to get out there? So that it's going to be kind of a comprehensive plan using data that we're going to be obtaining, and then also there's a portion of it where there's going to be a very heavy community outreach portion of it to try to it's easy enough to look at data on the computer and to kind of look at just the ones and zeros kinds of things, but we really want to get out there and talk to people and understand their transportation needs, what they're kind of looking for, where they're coming from and where they're going to, and really trying to tailor everything to make it the most efficient and the best system for them. So that's kind of the overview of the entire plan and the entire project that we're undertaking. So does anyone have anything else to add, or?
I think just you touched on a couple of the items, is that really it's organized around two key milestones, first being the existing conditions. And with that, we're going to generate a lot of information that shows transit propensity. What I mean by that is it's going to look at existing demographic and socioeconomic characteristics, and then it's also going to look highly at existing transit performance. And then we're going to use that as the basis to generate the scenarios that Joe mentioned, which are, of course, the short and the long-term scenarios. So the intent is for the information to be very graphic, visual, lots of mapping, tables and matrices that make it easy to understand and help make informed decisions through the community outreach process about where the priorities should lie in the future.
So, Commission, do you have any questions or any comments about anything that you would like to see?
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm just curious. Two things. Is this a particular exercise you're going to be doing? The cost of this exercise, where are the funds coming from?
They're coming from the regional tax. So we have budgeted two of these per year So those come from basically the overall regional tax, and those are allocated into like the Valley Metro budget.
Okay. And then the awareness of the citizens that you're going to be doing this, you're going to be using the city website, or are you going to be using the city water bill, or you're going to be involved with citizens, I'm assuming, to a certain degree?
Yeah, I don't know, Matt, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, one of the things, Chairman, Commissioner Nyland, we're looking at is talking with the council office, getting out for their events and using their email distribution list, and then having a good healthy component on the social media push from Valley Metro and from the Public Affairs Department.
Okay, Public Affairs from the city?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Is it just one?
I have a general
question. You know, the city of Glendale stopped with light rail, but the city of Phoenix is continuing on. Does that have any effect on the Glendale transit plan? How are we going to connect? Are we going to need more buses to connect to Phoenix? More lines? Is there anything going on like that?
Yeah, I mean, we will be looking at, you know, because... Really, I mean, no one really cares about the city boundaries pretty much when they're trying to get around. So we really want to make sure that we're having regional connections throughout the valley, and make sure that Glendale is really integrated with the rest of the regional connections. So, I mean, even though you may not be moving forward with light rail, there's still other high capacity transit that may work out for Glendale, maybe BRT or bus rapid transit or something like that. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things we're also going to explore, how to connect into, you know, the Phoenix light rail, not necessarily with light rail, but another high capacity transit option.
Okay. Question.
Well, I was thinking about something, but someone that I work with, they brought up an idea. Why not have you have a vehicle that goes from downtown Glendale to Gila River Arena for Cody games? Because a person could catch a bus to the pretty close, and then after certain hours, there's no way to get around.
Yeah, I mean, we don't generally, those would be kind of more special event kind of transit needs. And generally, we don't usually go into those types of things. I mean, certainly we can look at any kind of options. Part of the thing is that, you know, when you're say supporting, you know, people going to Coyotes game, that's a private enterprise, basically. And you know, people get a little bit squeamish about using public resources to support a private enterprise, and especially everything that we do, you know, it has to be open to the public, open to everyone in the public. So you know, if we were to, you know, run something like that, it would still have to make regular stops and take people, you know, to different areas if they just want to continue along, say Glendale Avenue or something like that.
So you ever thought about just adding extra buses during game nights going up and down Glendale Avenue, regular schedule,
I mean,
instead of 15 minutes every 5 minutes? Or
it's been looked at a few times, especially, you know, in Glendale, and then there's, you know, like Tempe has some similar needs of, you know, for ASU games or things like that. But for the most part, we're not really kind of in the business of providing some of those special transportation options. You know, we're more trying to, you know, provide options that people can use like all day, every day.
Okay, but, you know, I used to take the bus to Honeywell, and it ran up 59th Avenue all day long, and it was full twice in the morning and at night. The rest of the time, you're just wasting time, effort, and money. So do you have any plans for flexible schedules, or, you know, or does it have to be, if it's going on Monday, it has to be 5 days a week, every 15 minutes, rain or shine?
That's always kind of the goal, because we have certain transit standards, and we try to keep everything up to those transit standards. So for the most part, you know, if there's a local route that's running along whatever street, we try to keep it running, you know, at least Monday through Friday, and we do encourage it also to run on the weekends, and then we have certain We try to keep it at least at 30-minute frequency, to and that way people have like an assurance of we know this bus is coming by here every day. We know it's coming by here at a certain interval, and I can schedule my work around this, schedule where I need to go around this bus, rather than, you know, having something that runs on a Monday and a Thursday and a Saturday or something like that, where someone comes out on one of those days where it's not running and they and they're, you know, stranded somewhere.
Okay. What's the timeline for the transit plan? How many years are you looking into?
We plan to finish it this fiscal year in FY21. Okay. We just started it basically at the beginning of this fiscal year in July. And so we're still just basically kind of really getting geared up and running it together, and we, our goal is to finish it within this fiscal year.
You're looking up to 2025 or beyond?
We're looking up to 2025 for the short term, and then beyond for the long term.
Okay. Yeah. And just to add, there's a kind of talking about those milestones earlier. The existing conditions, that information would be prepared and completed by this fall, and then the scenarios would be after the new year. This project also be interesting because it's a really good data set that's going to be available. There was just a regional origin and destination survey that was done system-wide that has a lot of great data that's going to be of use for this study. So it's there's some benefit to delaying the existing conditions slightly to the fall so that data is available.
Just one question, just more in general with Valley Metro. Have you looked into using app-based ticketing?
Yes, we're actually in the process of moving more towards that and getting out of the paper ticket business. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a pilot program right now where certain individuals who are in the pilot can have it on their app on their phone where they're ticketing through that, and then they can use that to get onto the bus or the light rail and be able to, you know, say pay from their online banking account and add extra money for those types of things. And that's something that we're trying to, you know, work through all of the details with those kinds of things, making sure that all the cybersecurity is all up to snuff, making sure that, you know, no one's going to get hacked and lose their money, you know, those types of things.
Yeah, I've used that in San Diego and Houston, and it was great because you just, where do I want to go? What's it going to cost? And you just get on and show the driver.
Yeah, and that's where we're going to, and that's, you know, some of these things take a little time, but we're getting there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious because I don't ride your mass transit very often, hardly ever in 30 years. I've had two rides, I think. Are you in position right now, and forgive me for my ignorance, can I buy an annual pass right now today?
I think we mostly just sell monthly passes. That's the longest pass that we sell. Other than a U-Pass, if you're an ASU student, you can get it for a semester. But yeah, for like the general public, it's a monthly pass.
All right. So if I'm a senior, though, and I'm no longer driving, would you consider, or have you looked into an option where they can get a pass for more than a month?
So usually the longer passes are supplemented through the cities. Seniors do have a reduced fare pass that they can get, which is the monthly with their over the Social Security card, or if they're ADA, have ADA eligibility. If you are looking for something longer, usually it's something we run through, like City of Tempe does a youth pass. For all youth under 18, where it's a free pass paid for by the city, and that's good for whenever. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe mentioned ASU; they do a two-semester U pass. Employers do a, you know, regular card pass. But we haven't gotten into an annual pass at all. It's something that we probably would have to offer for regular riders at a regular fee, and then also have that for the reduced fare for seniors.
Yeah, I was just, you know, if you have a population that's in certain elements of Glendale or certain areas, we have an aging group. And as they age, driving is not something they do because of the growth of what's going on the streets. You know, so they're looking for alternatives, so they tend to rideshare more, and they go together. So, and some foreign countries, as you know, they do offer the annual pass.
I think one of the tricky things was the idea of if somebody loses that pass, you know, how do we do replacements for that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. If somebody, you know, and that's part of the problem. Like you lose a monthly pass, you're out $30 if you're a senior. You lose a yearly pass, I mean, that's exponentially, you know, $360 or whatever it would be. So it would, so I think that was part of the, you know, having to track that whole system and who tracks that. And so if it's run through like the city, if the city takes that on, that's different than Valley Metro. We haven't offered something regional like that.
Okay. But you have looked at it, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we try and think through all the options for riders and how to make their lives easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, commissioners?
When was the last time that this plan was completed for Glendale?
I would say the city did a plan 2008.
Yeah.
Was the last
as far as the transit plan.
Yeah.
I know when the transportation plan was updated in
2009.
Transit was a component of that.
Yeah.
But as far as a transit plan in of itself, it's been a few years, 14, 15 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Joe, can you speak to how you engage the commission throughout the plan process? Are there milestones that you come back and update the commission, or do you guys have that worked into your schedule at this point?
I don't think we specifically have that in the schedule, but I can see how we would come back when we're done kind of with the first phase with the existing conditions, and we could present that to you, and then we could come back again when we're done with the entire project let you see, you know, the entire work, if that's amenable to everyone here.
And it would be an opportunity to get feedback from the commission, right, as well, right, to sure, feed into your mm-hmm process.
Okay.
Just one more question.
One more question.
So I know Glendale has its own transportation plans. How do you make sure there's no conflicts, or do you have city staff telling you this is how Glendale is doing stuff? Or do you have all the information?
Yeah. I mean, as part of the existing conditions, we look through all of the existing transportation plans that would happen in the city, and then we'd also work very closely with your transit staff, with Matt and Kevin, to make sure that we're, you know, really making sure that we're staying on track with exactly what Glendale is looking for.
Yay! Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Next, we have the Gus Bus Tracker.
Now we're getting into the fun stuff.
Yeah. Nobody has presentations so far, so.
There we go. And a video at the end, too.
Oh, so. Wow.
Yeah, I'll try. Thank you, guys. Chairman, members of the commission. So last month, I think we brought to you just kind of a brief highlight about our new real-time bus tracking service that we've started here with our city-operated Glendale Urban Shuttles, which is our neighborhood circulators that run through mostly South and Central Glendale. So tonight, I want to give you kind of an update of where we're at. We're mostly at project completion, but to give you guys kind of an update on how it works and kind of what we're doing. So our Gus Bus Tracker is pretty much a real-time GPS bus tracking system, and it's designed primarily to track in real time the Gus buses as they're traveling along the city system. One of the things that we wanted to do when we were starting this project is make sure it was available to both like Android and iPhone users. So we wanted to make sure that the project that we started with is something that you could easily download for everybody, that it wasn't behind a particular paywall, that it was something open, easy, and free to the public. The features are primarily you'll be able to view buses in real time. You can view the specific routes, so we have Gus 1, 2, and 3. You can see your current location if your location is enabled on your Android or iPhone to see where you are in relationship to the current route. And one of the more important things is is we can push out in real time any type of information in terms of passenger announcements, detours, or delays. One of the things that we've had with Gus 1 as it crosses Grand Avenue is at 8:30, 10:30, 2:30, and sometimes 4:30 is the train will block the road. And so that puts our Gus bus behind schedule. So if you open up a Valley Metro map and a time book, you'll say, okay, Gus bus runs top of the hour and bottom of the hour. But you could be standing at a stop and say, hey, you know what? I've been here at the top of the hour and I've been here at the bottom of the hour. But that train maybe might have been on the track for an additional half hour. So you don't know exactly where that bus is going to be, and it puts the bus behind schedule quite amount for the whole entire day. So one of the target users that we have is primarily our Gus bus users, but also for our dispatchers. Because when we have those delays, we'll get calls from passengers saying, hey, I'm at Walmart, where's my Gus bus? And so the dispatcher will often, okay, wait, let me call out to the Gus bus, hey Gus bus, where are you? And then relay that information back to the passenger. This app is hopefully going to prevent that. So when you download it and see it, you can see in real time, you won't have to call. You can see exactly where the Gus bus is going to be. Our secondary users is for our Gus drivers, for supervisors, and for administration. This particular software package provides very much a very sturdy software in the back, so it helps us on our planning processes as we go forward. I'll show you here in a little bit. So our user goals, again, track exact location of the bus in real time. Receive estimated time of arrival per bus stop. This also has, you know, not everybody has a smartphone. So we also bought into the SMS text capability. And you'll see at the end that we're going to, one of our next steps is to put out bus stop signs specific for Gus at every particular stop. And each one of those stops will have a bus stop number. So if you don't have a smartphone, but you do have text capability, you can, you know, text 623-321-2700 and your bus stop number, and you'll get an immediate feedback about when your Gus bus is going to arrive, whether it's Gus 1, Gus 2, or Gus 3. It also helps us, again, provide information if that bus has been stuck and the train's delayed, we can push out that information to the users. And we're trying to make it a very hassle-free and intuitive experience for all our passengers. And our agency goal is, one of the things, we have about 2.3 million riders per year in Glendale for this entire system. And our Gus bus provides about 100,000 rides, and it's a free system. So one of the main features with a circulator system is for people to gather from the neighborhoods to be able to, instead of walking 3/4 of a mile or a mile to a particular bus stop, it helps collect them and easily get them to the major thoroughfares. 67th, 59th, 51st, where all the major Valley Metro buses are running. So this is just one of those things that kind of helps them in their process. It helps us for better data for planning, and it enhances the Gus bus brand. So this is one of the first in the region to have a real-time bus tracker. Valley Metro is working on their particular bus tracker, but this is the first one to kind of roll out for the region. Also, we've gone from a paper, up until this project started, we were at like, all right, you know, the bus stops at a stop, the driver stops, they pick up a clipboard with a pen and paper, and like, all right, 1, 2, 3 people got on, you know, and 2 people got off. So we're trying to eliminate, you know, the pen and paper, and we're going to a software where you can just kind of push, the driver can push, you know, one on, one off, and it uploads the information into the cloud, so that way it helps for better data accounting processes for us. This is one of the first maps I kind of populated out of it, and this is our ridership heat maps. And this shows kind of Gus 2, which shows up in central North Glendale here. You'll have GCC. Up here you'll have the Adult Center, and this is up at Home Depot, at 59th and Peoria. And this will help us in the future as we start planning to say, okay, where are these people getting on? Where are these people getting off? And we'll also be able to see, is there wheelchair pickups? So as we go and plan our amenities for our bus stops, we know exactly where we need to put those improvements instead of just going out there and, you know, let's sit there for, you know, half a day, waste time seeing if somebody's using it at this particular stop. So it'll really kind of help us in our planning process. This is a little screenshot. It's not very clear though of our ridership and reporting data. This just looks at like a week's worth of time, and so then it helps us see exactly where are these people getting on. And it's hard to see here, but this is the City Hall stop. Walmart is the big one. And Sonic over there off of like 65th and Glendale, some of our major transit stops. So that helps us in the planning of our future amenities.
Now you said 100,000 people a year?
100,000 use GUS.
Wow. I see a GUS bus go empty every time I see it.
Well, a lot of them are repetitive users, right?
Yeah, a lot of them are repetitive users.
That's a total headcount over the year.
Yeah.
It could be 40,000.
It could be, yeah. I wish there was a way to track, you know, the number of unique riders, but yeah, just we're not at that capability yet to kind of do that. So our next step as we start kind of rolling out, it's just been active pretty much for about the last month or so, this is kind of our public affairs approved new GUS bus stop. So that way, each passenger, when they're at a stop, they can see, all right, this is a GUS stop. We know that, you know, we have a double map app enabled. We've gone on board the bus, we've put out flyers so that way the passengers know. And our drivers have been educated to, hey, you know, if you're curious, hey, if you need to know where your next GUS bus is, please download the free app and you can see exactly where it's at. And then that way each stop will have a bus stop number for those who don't have that smartphone capability, and they can just kind of text in right to that number and see exactly where that GUS bus is. You guys are one of the first ones to kind of see this, but this is kind of the new, as you came in, you saw our new DollarRide vehicle. Mm. So it's equipped with our new color scheme that we have from public affairs and for the city. And so we are in the process of acquiring a 35-foot bus, which is one of the larger buses. It's coming out of Indianapolis, and this is going to be the new design of the GUS bus. Our old design hasn't been updated, I think, since I've been here, and that's, you know, early 2000, I think late 1990s. It had a very 1990s type of feel to it. So we wanted to update it, change the brand, and also roll out one of the our real-time bus trackers. So Kevin gives it a fresh new look so people can, you know, take the GUS bus.
Are your bus stops at city bus stops or are they all separate?
Both, combination of both. There's some stops along like 59th Avenue, Glendale, 51st that are a combination GUS bus stops and Valley Metro bus stops. But we have a lot of bus stops that are standalone that are in the neighborhood where you kind of put those giant 40 to 60 foot Valley Metro buses through there. And that's what helps kind of collect a lot of the passengers in these neighborhoods to kind of bring them out to the main arterial so that they can use the Valley Metro bus. So our next stop is, we got this approved. So we'll be rolling out these new GUS bus stops probably in about a month or so. We have an education process kind of ongoing. I meet with Valley Metro when we do different presentations, and then the transit division also goes out to some of the different senior centers and we kind of give this information out. We are also trying, you know, with the millennials and all our users, is try to do some geo-targeted social media outreach. So sometimes when you're on Instagram or Facebook, we're going to kind of geo-fence it in. And then that way, if you're on there and ask, oh, hey, have you tried your brand new GUS bus app? So that way we can get the information out there. An additional kind of outreach we're doing.
You got a question?
No, actually, I have a comment. Matt, I have ridden the GUS bus a couple times. Once we were going 43rd to the Fry store, a lady did not know about the GUS being free. I think the driver might have been Teresa or Virginia.
Virginia
told the passenger about it. It was great. The person rode from 43rd Maryland to the Fry store. Then she got on the Valley Metro. But you know, I think I may start using it. Like I live around 44th Lane and Montebello.
Okay.
I'm going to start using it more instead of walking.
Okay. And we've connected all three GUS buses, so you can connect from, if you want to, GUS 1 to GUS 2, GUS 3. I'd say like the major, when we talk about that Walmart stop, that's the main location over there at 55th Avenue, just south of Northern, where all three GUS buses connect. And that can take you, you know, from any area of the city, so you can go from South Denver to Central.
They stop on 55th Avenue, right?
Yes, sir.
Heading north, and everybody jaywalks.
Everybody jaywalks. Yeah. We try to...
Old people don't jaywalk as fast as they used to.
We're working on trying to solve that problem. Working with Walmart and that developer across the street to see if you can kind of bring in the Gust buses kind of on there. So it is an ongoing issue that we've had.
That's a good suggestion, Matt.
Good suggestion. See? Party line. There you go.
It's the northbound that's got the issue. I just noticed a whole bunch of people walking across the middle of the street.
Yeah, I know. And it's a situation we're definitely aware of, Mr. Chairman, and it's one of those things we're trying to work out to see what would be the best solution. We always try to tell people, hey, you know, when you get the bus down, please don't jaywalk. Please, you know, walk to Norlern and cross. But I know.
Would the street south of Walmart, I don't know what it is.
Hayward.
Could you hang a left there and come in? There's an entry and then go out back.
We've looked at a couple of options to kind of either kind of drop them off right there as we make that left-hand turn onto Hayward. Fortunately, it kind of drops them as right next to the loading docks.
Right.
And then it's almost kind of a more of a dangerous situation to kind of do that. But if we go down a little further, there's the ability to kind of like pop through there, and I think there's a light around there.
But then Walmart doesn't want you, I mean, could you drive through the parking lot as well? I wonder, hang a left.
We could. It's not only working with Walmart, but it's also kind of the main developer of that complex. And it's a liability issue. So we've been in contact with them over the years. Walmart seems to be kind of more receptive to it versus kind of like the developer who sees it as kind of a liability issue. So it's an ongoing process, but when we go and do outreach at Manistee Manor and Tanner Terrace, that's one of the things. Hey, can you either move, you know, put a hawk signal? Can you drop me off at the door at Walmart? And just one of those things that we're going to be working on here pretty much in the next year. So,
Good suggestion, Commissioner. Your chair, excuse me.
But yeah, so that'll be the new Gust bus. And I want to, before I end this, I want to show you guys a public affairs department here in the city just to put together a new outreach video. And it will show us exactly what this new real-time Gust bus tracker does.
You guys should all download this.
The bus is now on WatchFree. Free mobile bus tracking app that gives riders a real-time look at the estimated bus arrival times. To track Gus and find out when you should be at your stop, download the DoubleMap Bus Tracker app on iOS or Android. When opening the app for the first time, riders will be asked to select a system. Glendale, Arizona riders should select Gus, Glendale, Arizona. The app will default to a live map of each of the three Gus routes, which are designated by orange, blue, and red lines. Stops are designated by a dot in the appropriate color. Riders will see icons for each bus, which move in real time. You can get more information on the route by clicking on the bus, the route, or the bus stop on the interactive map. By selecting a route, riders can see a list of all the available stops. Clicking on the stop will display the current time of arrival for the next bus. If you frequent the stop, make sure to add it to your favorites by selecting the heart icon in the top right of the screen. To access favorites and other features like route selection, alerts, and announcements, click the menu icon in the top left. For more information on the always free Gus the Bus, visit www.glendaleaz.com.
So it looks like this app is for the millennials and the fifth graders, because most of the elderly people, I know a lot of them don't even have cell phones. They have flip phones, but they can't text because they can't see it.
You know, so, Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. We were just at the assisted living complex over there, Manistee Manor.
Hey, everybody. Glendale Mike out here at Gila River Arena. Oh, well, hip hop culture.
It's my final style. Okay. And I was honestly amazed what some of these seniors could do. There was a 94-year-old lady who was downloading the app, wanting to know how to use it. Some of these seniors are really kind of connected using their smartphones. I was pleasantly surprised. They're like, hey, you know, I will download this app so that way I know. One of them I was speaking to said, hey, now this is going to be great for us, because before she would be at Walmart saying, okay, I know the Gust bus is going to be, you know, across the street there on 55th Avenue at the top and the bottom of the hour. And, you know, it's 110 degrees out there. And as a senior, you know, they're saying, my body, you know, with the heat, I just can't do it like I used to before. So it's great to have something like this. And if the Gus bus has been delayed, they can see that, hey, it's been delayed with the information, and they can wait inside Walmart and not have to get out the stop, yeah, you know, 15, 20 minutes early because they thought the Gus bus was going to get there. Yeah. So it's
like
one of those.
You just see them running from Walmart to try to get to 55th. That's, you know, a couple hundred yards from that.
It is, but that's why when you look on the app, you can see exactly if you favorite that bus stop. Walmart bus stop is bus stop number 108. So they can text or they can see and click on your bus stop and favorite it, yeah, and they can see that in, you know, 15, 20 minutes, the Gus bus is going to be there. It constantly updates.
Double map GPS, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm playing with my phone. Next question.
Just a question based on the gentleman who's talking. He used two words there, and those two words, in one of the things that we do in our business, anytime there's something free, we put that right at the top. So he said, always free. So just a suggestion or just for your thought process to consider, if you all your stuff that you are putting together, the two words, always free, and even on the bus, would probably alert more people that are suspect, maybe, how much is that? You know, and the new bus is going to be so excitingly colorful, even though our water letter never is colorful anymore, but something in there about the always free again might be appropriate as well when they do that monthly letter.
Yeah. I like the always free tag. That's a good idea. All right, so this is the first step in our evolution of transit. So we'll be back in a few months when we talk about our next step in our evolution. Valley Metro is not here, but we're working on an application that integrates, as you saw, our Dial-A-Ride vehicle out front. And so what we're trying to do is, again, this is kind of keeping up with the times, everybody loves Uber and Lyft. So one of our pilot studies we're going to be doing here, hopefully at the beginning of next year, is try to marry, you know, the good things of what Glendale Dial-A-Ride, you know, we have great vehicles and we have great drivers, highly trained drivers. Now our next step is to try to take that information, and then what's great with Uber and Lyft, it's the online booking, it's paying on your phone to be able to do that, and we're going to try to integrate those with a six-month pilot project, what we call microtransit, with a company out of Virginia that will kind of marry and integrate that, so that way you can kind of have an Uber Lyft experience with Glendale Dial-A-Ride, but you can also book like an Uber and Lyft on your phone and you can pay on your phone. So we're just in the initial stages of doing that, but we'll come back in the future to be able to kind of let you know how that's going.
Cool.
Thank you. It doesn't work on my phone, so
we'll come back. Oh, I'll help you. All right. Any other questions?
No, very interesting.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Glendale's first again, right?
Glendale's first again with our app, and we'll be first again with our microtransit.
Okay, item number 9. Anybody need water? Anybody need cookie? Pat, do you want to talk about that?
Sure, dears commissioners. Both our chair and vice chair will be absent from the next meeting. Therefore, the commission needs to identify an acting chair for the meeting. My suggestion is to ask for volunteers and see if we can come to a consensus regarding that role. It's pretty straightforward. It's not a real arduous task, but it is important.
Cheat sheet.
you get to swing the gavel, so there's an important component there too.
You volunteers?
And I know I'll be here, so I can volunteer.
There you go.
There you go, right there. One guy.
We don't even have to vote. Congratulations.
Well, it says possible action. Do you need to vote?
We I don't think
okay.
We need to vote. If you wanted to, if you
no, insist. No,
there was
I don't.
Contention,
yeah, you know, we
I'm not the chair of this meeting.
Arm wrestle.
Alrighty. Manager's report. Is our manager here?
He was. No, thank you. Just ran out.
I said he'd be right back.
Okay.
Cookie break. Cookie break.
Yes.
So we will be heading to Tennessee, driving with our trailer, 1,000 miles.
What part?
Pigeon Forge.
Oh, that's amazing.
The Pigeon Forge National Quartet Convention.
I got a friend that's from Nashville. She just came out here.
We're going to drive. We're going to go to Branson, Missouri. I was telling somebody, I didn't realize you have to want to go to Branson because I-40 is up here and I-27 or something's down there.
You go right
through Arkansas and you got to come up to it.
Yeah.
And it's got Ferris wheels and river cruises and all kinds of stuff.
You're on a beautiful lake there.
They have all kinds of Broadway off Broadway shows. I didn't realize that. Why Branson?
I remember when Samson was saying.
Not even freeway close.
It used to be one in and one out. I don't know if that was it. But it's good. Silver Dollar City is a big attraction down there. And,
yep.
A lot of name entertainers.
Table Rock Lake.
The museums. Mm-hmm. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me. Pardon me.
Yeah, good.
Had to use the facilities. Chair and members of CDOC, manager support, I'll keep it brief. We had quite an agenda today, so I'll go through this real quick. Northern Parkway, the project that's under construction between Dicer and 111, which is the frontage roads and the Agafrio Bridge project, is making good progress. The project's halfway through, and the schedule is only 40% complete, so it's actually running ahead of schedule. And if you've driven out there, you'll see that the bridge girders and it's made substantial progress.
Yeah.
So that's on track to be completed by, the schedule is to be done by August 2020. But as I mentioned, it's running a little ahead of schedule, so that's a good thing. The study, again, Northern Parkway, the study between Grand and 99th Avenue, that one is scheduled to be completed end of this month. There was a public meeting a few months ago. I know some of you have attended that. May end this month or possibly next month, depending on there's a discussion about a couple of different intersection locations. So they're doing a little more detailed analysis of it. So if that runs into the next month, we may go into October. But we are close to getting done with that. Pavement management update on the needs. It's scheduled to go to council on September 24th. You heard about the pavement management program, I believe three times over the last 6 months. And depending on what guidance we get from council, if we end up doing the September 24th, we'll definitely bring it back and get your input and share that with council again. So we believe there'll be opportunity for that.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You can ask a question, but yeah. We can't discuss it.
We can't discuss it. So I can't really get an answer then.
And so maybe I'll repeat what I was trying to say or maybe phrase it differently. So we did get CTOC's input support for the pavement management program, mm-hmm. And support to put additional resources towards that. And that information will be shared with council. And whatever guidance comes out of council will be brought back to CTOC. And any new input that CTOC might want to share with council will be sought from CTOC, so there'll be an opportunity for that. Because this is a workshop, September 24th is a workshop, so if there's any substantial change, any changes, there will be a council action item. So there will be an opportunity in between that. At least that's my understanding, so. But September 24th, that's the plan, and we'll send an email out once that schedule is sort of solid.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of scheduled ones that sort of got delayed, so we'll keep you abreast of that. And once the pavement management workshop is done, the intent is we'll also do a transportation plan one. We don't have an exact schedule when that's going to be, but it'll be after we've sort of get a good idea of what where pavement management is going, because that's a big piece of the transportation plan. And The last one on that slide is Camelback Road reconstruction. If you've driven on Camelback between 43rd and 51st, you notice there's a lot of traffic control. You're down to one lane traffic in each direction. Basically, the ADA and the driveway, ADA-related driveway work on the north side is done. I believe the south side either is being worked on or is complete. Then they'll get to the, I think they may already have completed the milling of the roadway. I haven't been out there, but it was scheduled to be done towards the end of August. So I believe milling of the pavement should be done. But that's the construction project that's underway. There's also waterline replacement that'll be done in conjunction. So you'll see a lot of work that's going to be done out there. This one, these are all funding opportunities that we have through the region and the state. So the first one there, active transportation. Patrick presented a couple of projects to what's called design assistance. Basically, they get to a conceptual design of the project. So two projects were submitted under that. It's bike lanes basically along 67th from Missouri to Choya, broken into two parts. And both of them were funded. Funded at the committee level, they're going through the MAG committee process, and regional council eventually will act on it. And our mayor is part of the regional council. So once the regional council approves it, then it becomes officially funded. So we are it's going through that process right now. The second one, Patrick's working on the applications for the same projects, and maybe we'll also look at applying for some pedestrian stuff like sidewalk improvements, but that's still work under progress. Those are opportunities that exist. Similarly, on the second bullet, ITS construction, there's CMAQ funding for CMAQ construction, congestion mitigation and air quality funding, which is federal. There's different federal pots of money that come through the federal gas tax. So this is one of those categories. It's to deal with congestion and improving air quality. And that funding is divided among ITS, intelligent transportation systems, and street sweepers, because they take away some of the, you know, finer particles off the roadway, so that that improves the air quality. So those are those two categories that are there. And then MAG roadway safety program, there was some federal funds that MAG sent to ADOT, and in return got some state gas tax money. So the state gas tax money doesn't have all the strings attached that come with federal money. So that funding opportunity is also going to be open soon, and Glendale plans to go after that. And the last one is the ADOT HSIP projects. That's HSIP stands for Highway Safety Improvement Program, and that is administered by ADOT. Everything above that is through MAG. So ADOT's the one on the last one, and Glendale has, again, it's going through the process, but at the staff level, they've secured the funding for two projects, which is, some of you have seen the flashing yellow arrows at various intersections. So we have another project that's funded out in 2023, I believe. So this is the one after that. So another additional six intersections. So this will add to stuff that we already have on the books. And the second one is a Hawk pedestrian crossing. So if you've seen the one at 60 in front of Glendale High School on Glendale, and also there's a couple on Bethany Home around 60th and I believe 65th, and there's one on Beardsley Road at 63rd. Right. So this is to add another one across 67th near Montebello. So those are going through, again, officially it has to be approved, but at staff level we have secured it. So those are some of the funding opportunities that we are working on or in the process of securing. That's all I had, and obviously I cannot take any questions.
Let me ask Patrick, I got a question. When they do the HSIP, Is it based on 50 people trying to cross in that particular place? Do you have any idea what selects the locations?
We would have to bring in Debbie Albert to address that, because I think it's a fairly complex application process, and I think there are a lot of factors.
Okay. And then another thing, to bring in your answer maybe next month or sometime, if the county funding tax goes away, what effect is that going to have on Glendale, if any, in 2025? Do we have any projects that we're hoping for them to do that they won't be able to do?
We can add those as future agenda items, Chair Pierce.
Before it goes out of my mind.
Right. Okay. Are you talking like Prop 400?
Yeah, when Prop 400 expires.
Oh, that'd be great.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Well, thank you very much. Commissioner updates. Did any commissioner go and do anything in the last month other than stay cool? No. No council meetings, no. I know Ian's having another one at Manistee Ranch here pretty soon. And because of that, they're actually spraying all of the palm trees to eradicate the hundreds of thousands of scorpions that are living there. ASU has done a study on scorpion counts, so they put all these little counters in, and they gave up on counting the number of scorpions in the palm trees out in front of Manistee Ranch.
Wow.
That's in front of the house.
Oh,
now, there's not too many in the orchard. There's some on the wall. They were living on the wall. But those palm trees have been there for 100 years, and that between them were the cats.
Wow.
That's scorpion.
It's not an update, but I just wanted to let you know that the Arrowhead Ranch area in Phase 3, you've almost completed the project up there. He's gone, but the work. And the feedback I'm getting is everybody's happy with it. A lot of people don't understand what it is, but the communication to the residents in advance of it was very well done. And because of that, everyone, if they can read, knew what to expect. So it was orchestrated, managed, and still a little bit going on, but you're almost complete, I think, with that up at north end piece. So great, you know, nice job too.
Thank we you. Lovely that information to our paper managers.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
75th.
Yeah.
Was it 75th?
It's from 59th Avenue over to 75th. And the piece I'm talking about is Phase 3. It's 101 Beardsley North section of the ranch. There's like 12,000 home or 1,700 home sites in that particular ranch area. But that was all pavement improvement, if you will. They did the slurry and coating. But whoever the contract was with, they did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well,
super. Okay, anything else? We go to future agenda items. We have a PMP follow-up, Elite Street overview discussion in October. The next month's transportation plan, annual program workshop. November looks like electric charging stations, Mag 101, park and ride, single shop field trip. December, airport field trip, some ITS, TSN project updates, and Mag roadway safety program. Any other requests?
Could we get a field trip to Seattle?
Why?
Because they are improving their mass transit.
Oh.
More. They're doing more and more. They keep doing more and more. It's amazing.
Mm.
You know. Mm-hmm. I want to go to Seattle too. I like Seattle.
I'll be there for New Year's.
Oh, that's nice.
That'd be a field trip.
Make a
very nice point.
Okay, the next item is the next meeting. It says next regular meeting for the Citizens Transportation Oversight Commission will be held on October 3rd in the Conference Room B, located in Council Chambers Building.
Chair Gears, Commissioners, Commissioner Jared has already pointed out to us that we have a typo in that. So the next meeting is expected to be in this location.
Now, that's insightful. I thought maybe they were remodeling this room and putting in separate air conditioning or something.
Chair Gears, Commissioners, I think nice. We can all say that the air conditioning worked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yes. So it'll be set time, set place. Yeah. And I will be there. I'll be in, probably in.
Pigeon.
We're going to stop by Myrtle Beach and see if it's still there.
rather than Myrtle Avenue.
I called this meeting to adjourn.